BNR Nieuwsradio. The Big Five. Diana Matroos.
Welkom bij BNR's Big Five van het nieuwe Amerika. We weten nu dat Biden de 46e president van de Verenigde Staten wordt. Maar we weten ook dat het Trumpisme diep geworteld is. En dus kun je je afvragen, ondanks al die wereldwijde emotionele reacties, of er echt wel een nieuw tijdperk komt. Om de complexiteit van de verdeeldheid in Amerika beter te begrijpen en te kijken wat dat voor ons in Europa en Nederland betekent, praat ik deze week met 5 excellente Amerika-kenners. En mijn gast vandaag is Ayaan Hirsi Ali. En dat behoeft nog even wat introductie, want we kennen haar natuurlijk als spraakmakend Tweede Kamerlid voor de VVD. In die tijd werd zij overigens ook voorgedragen voor de Nobelprijs voor de Vrede. Maar ze verhuisde naar Amerika om daar haar werk voor te zetten als mensenrechtenactiviste. En nu is ze onderzoeker aan de Hoover Institute van Stanford University. Het gesprek dat ik zo met haar heb is vanwege het tijdsverschil tussen Californië en Nederland gisteravond al opgegeven. En we voeren het gesprek op verzoek van Ayaan Hirsi Ali in het Engels. Welcome, Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
First of all, I would like to say congratulations, because by the time we broadcast this interview, it's your birthday.
Yes, thank you very, very much. Oh, that's so sweet of you.
Well,
you're right.
Yeah, what I was wondering, what are your hopes for the next year of your life? Because it's your birthday.
Well, my hopes are that we lead a normal life. I mean, I do with my family. But of course, the country I live in the United States, we are, as you said in your introduction, divided and polarized. And there is... I don't know, if you talk to normal average people, you actually don't see it. Everyone is polite and civil and they're going about their business. But in our media, in our politics, I think it's a little hectic. And so I hope that things calm down.
Okay, the next coming hour, we're going to talk about it, of course. And we're so happy to have you, and actually I'm honored because you have a unique voice in the public debate. Why is it important for you to address the Dutch audience at this moment?
Well, I've always had a relationship with Holland. I tell my American friends that, in fact, the Netherlands and my years in the Netherlands, that was the precursor to the life that I lead now, and that's where I found my freedom and, you know, got through education. I went to Leiden. I still have a number of friends in the Netherlands, and I love it as a country, so... you know.
Yeah. So there's still a connection, and that is why you also want to address the Dutch audience what is going on now in the United States. You're a research fellow at the Hoover Institute and also founder of the Ayaan Hirsi Ali Foundation. Could you briefly describe what your work entails nowadays? What's your main goal?
Well, so for the Hoover Institution, I work on two projects. One is the project that I think most of the Dutch audience is familiar with, which is the ideology of radical Islam. And I don't really deal very much with the violent aspects of it. I deal with the ideology itself. It's called Dawah. Again, I don't know how familiar your audience is with this, but it is really... What are the steps and what is the kind of messaging? What are the institutions and that lead to radicalization? You know, why are some individuals attracted to it while others are not? Mm-hmm. How big is the problem? And I think you can see what's going on in France, in Austria, in other parts of Europe, such as Germany, that if you focus only on terrorist attacks, you miss the big picture of what actually leads to these terrorist activities. And I'm now also focusing on this brand new, it's not a brand new ideology, but, you know, it seems like it's a brand new ideology because mm-hmm. a lot of people are becoming familiar with it now, which is what is called wokeism. And I think back in Holland, we used to call it multiculturalism. We called it moral relativism. But it was an ideology back then that only seemed to affect the relationship between the host society and immigrants. And now it has spread to, at least in the United States, to beyond minorities, and it's engulfing.
Yeah. So this worries you, of course. Yeah.
Yes, it worries me because it is a movement that wants to curb freedom of speech. It's a movement that racializes everything. It's a movement that's turning society, instead of seeing people as individual citizens, it's trying. What they're trying to do is, you know, divide society into groups, and then these groups are supposed to have only one relationship, and that is a power relationship. And in that power relationship, it's a zero-sum game, and it's very interesting. But it's also fascinating that it's now become, especially among millennials, something of a cult.
And when you look at the millennials, because you're very worried about the group think we have, and you also compare it with the tribes that you also brought up with in Somalia.
Yes.
What do you see when you see the young people now?
And I have to, first of all, I have to state very clearly, it's not all young people. At the University of Stanford, what I see is that most kids, most students are just going about their daily business. They're focusing on whatever it is that they're majoring in. But there is an undercurrent where many students say they actually don't feel comfortable talking about their views, sharing their views. We are being subjected to exercises called racial bias training or unconscious bias trainings. And what all of this tells us is, and here's why I compared it to tribalism, is for me, what makes a liberal society with a constitution different from illiberal ones or tribal ones is that we start with the individual. We say we recognize the individual, and that's where our common humanity begins. And here, the adherents of this ideology, like this woman called Robin DiAngelo, this guy called Ibram X. Kendi, they're saying that's not how it works. When you talk about individual responsibility, you're really covering up for racism. There are collectives that have been oppressed, and there are collectives that are oppressors. So, for instance, all white people are supposedly racist, and all black people are supposedly victims.
So and the Western culture is all about the white people doing bad things to the other people. So that's the group thinking that you describe.
That is the group think, yeah. That is the group thing. And so they never mention, what about all the good things that white people have done? What about all the white people who fought and died? Again, they died fighting slavery. They fought and died fighting for desegregation. And, this whole dividing society into groups and then assigning these groups traits that they are not allowed to escape out of, reducing human relationships only to one of power, whereas I think human relationships are very rich and very complicated. It's unfortunate that a large number of young people have now fallen for it, and we have institutions like the New York Times, some of the other cultural institutions, Hollywood, the campuses, and now even corporations, where young people are using this ideology to silence people they don't agree with.
Yeah, you also refer to the media. I would like to read a tweet you sent out in June, and that provoked much criticism. You then stated, what the media also do not tell you is that America is the best place on the planet to be black, female, gay, trans, or what have you. We have our problems, and we need to address those. But our society and our systems are far from racist. Can you imagine people feel like you're denying racism?
I mean, I can imagine that. Of course, I can imagine it. Also, they tell me, you are denying racism. There is racism, and so on and so forth. I'm not denying the existence of racism. I think there are racists. in the United States of America as there are racists in the Netherlands. But I think that that is a small group of people. I think they're a fringe, and I think beginning, say, after the Second World War, these hardcore true racists have been marginalized. They don't speak for all of America as they don't speak for all of Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we have inequalities in America? Yes, we do. Are there more people, more black people and Hispanics who make less and who are underprivileged
mm-hmm.
compared to whites? The answer to that question is yes. But is it caused only by racism? Could there be other causes? These social issues are very, very complicated. And if you talk to some of my colleagues at the Hoover Institution, like Thomas Sowell, like Shelby Steele, the other day I had a conversation with Ian Rowe. These are all black men who grew up. Condoleezza Rice is now the president of the Hoover Institution. When you talk to these people, they will explain to you that it really is not only caused by race. Yes, there is a racial component, but there are other things as well. And it is very important for us to talk about these other variables
yeah.
if we want to close this gap of inequality.
Okay, it concerns you. And then on the other hand, you also stated that, of course, that there are problems when it comes to minorities in the United States.
Yes.
For example, research shows that 24% of the people that died of police violence in the USA were black. And the black population is only 13%, so 40% of the prisoners is black. So we can see that there is a problem when it comes to racism as well. And we also know what happened with George Floyd. So you're not denying that?
I'm not denying that there is racism. But I'm saying it is the issue is more complicated than just racism. The crime rate within and among the black community is high. So their confrontation with the police is an issue, but that is not just because white racist policemen have an impulse to go and put black men in prison. It's not as simplistic as that. It's the way when we have in the Netherlands, we have these discussions about, let's say, how do we assimilate Moroccan communities, you know, why are young Moroccan men overrepresented in the police, prison populations? Is it because the Dutch are racist, or are there other variables, other factors that contribute to that?
Okay, so
I think that every
yeah.
Western country is having this kind of discussion, but here is a movement that wants to do, it's really, you know, it's a Marxist movement. It's only interested in equal outcomes, not equal opportunity, and it's going to try and force us to adopt policies
mm-hmm.
that redistribute wealth in a way that they dictate and in a way that we as citizens have nothing to say about. But I think also in its own approach, by racializing everything, you're actually creating racism yourself.
Why?
Because if you say every problem that we have is race-based, you make people who are totally oblivious to their skin color. You convince some of the black people that they're victims of racism. You convince some of the white people that, well, if my entire heritage is racist, I might just as well be. The logic of dividing society into collectives that are on war footing with one another, in my view, is immoral, it's wrong, and it's going to lead to the exact opposite of what they say they want to achieve.
Yeah, this worries you, and I know you also have two children. They're very small, and they have also a black skin. What do you tell your children? One of the two is very little, but the one of 8 years old, what do you tell your son?
I tell my son that the most superficial trait he has is his skin color. It's the least interesting part. What is most interesting is his character and developing that. his education. When I talk to him about his future, I ask him, what are you passionate about? What do you want to do in life? We teach him all about being kind and generous and good and being a good citizen, but most of all, being responsible. The kind of fights I have with my son is when he says, I didn't do it, you know, it just happened to me. It's like, no, you have to take responsibility. You have those conversations. Now, the conversations that I think you also have with your children, and any caring parent would have with their children, is that you learn individual responsibility, that you learn to postpone your gratification.
Yeah.
That you learn to be polite and kind to others, that you work hard.
And it's not an option to think in the oppressor and the ones being oppressed.
That's not an option. But everything I told you just now has been condemned as whiteness by these individuals like D'Angelo and Ibram X. Kendi, the people who are pushing the woke ideas. They're saying, oh, come on, individual responsibility, that's just code for racism. Mm-hmm. But if you want children to grow up to be responsible citizens and you want them to get ahead in life, you have to teach them these social values. And they're saying that these social values themselves are racist because they're invented by white people and these white people have imposed it on everyone else.
Okay, so you're referring also when it comes to the woke movement, you're also referring to the Black Matter, BLM movement, of course. And you're also very worried that the left-wing politics are influenced by this movement.
So the movement is called Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, that's Black Lives Matter, yes. I know, I'm sorry, just got something wrong. Yeah.
No, but that's not an issue at all. But who disagrees with Black Lives Matter? Now, there were incidents of police confrontations between individual male blacks who ended up dying, and some of these police were indicted. They were charged, they were prosecuted, and some of these police officers were acquitted or they were fired from their positions, and some of them might end up going to prison. Do you want to address police brutality? Of course, please, by all means. There is a Republican senator who is black who has written a bill saying, let's reform the entire police system. But his bill was rejected by the Democratic side because they think it doesn't go far enough. What does going far enough mean? It means they're saying, Black Lives Matter movement is saying, abolish the police completely, abolish prisons, free all those people who are in prison for drug-related issues. Take money away from the whites and give it to the blacks. It's this kind of mind-boggling propositions that I think are hamstringing, hindering the Democratic Party and what is now the hard left, because Black Lives Matter is sort of the hard Marxist left wing of the Democratic Party, is, in my view, the reason why Biden and Harris did not do as well as was expected.
And when you the speech of Kamala Harris, what do you find about this speech?
I think both speeches were fine.
Mm-hmm.
Biden's speech and Harris's speech, that was all fine. But one day before the election, on Monday, Kamala Harris tweeted a video that was promoting the idea of equal outcomes. Now, that is not a good idea. That's terrible. That's
why
communism.
Not? Because equality is also something that is very important in the United States.
And everywhere. I think equality is important everywhere. But there's a distinction between equality of opportunity, equality before the law, which we all support, and equal outcomes, which is what Stalin tried to achieve which is what Pol Pot tried to achieve, what the Chinese community tried to achieve. You don't achieve equal outcomes. Unless you want to have a lot of people in gulags and dead, and it's a total misery. So this whole philosophy of it's equal outcomes is completely wrong. Why was Harris doing that? She was trying to appease people like Ocasio-Cortez and the other hard left, hardcore wing of the party.
And that's why you stated that the left has been infiltrated by the Black Lives Matter movement.
I wouldn't say that the so if we're talking in this country, we have the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats have to bring in any from center left to as far left as they can. They need to bring the vote out, and that I think is one effort that is laudable, that is praiseworthy. But I don't think that they should adopt the policies of the hard left. I think that going back to the center, where the whole, you know, in Holland, how we say consensus politics, I think with this outcome, we now actually have consensus politics, where the White House goes to the Democratic Party and the Senate goes to the Republican Party. And in that scenario, if it holds after the Georgia runoffs, then they will actually be forced to compromise.
And I know that you voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, so you voted for the Democrats. Did you vote for them also this year?
No, I left it blank.
You left it blank, so because you're a registered independent?
Yes.
So you didn't vote for Kanye West?
No, if you look at the ballot, you don't have to do that.
Okay, so you voted blank. Ik ben benieuwd hoe Ayaan Hirsi Ali kijkt naar de Nederlandse politiek. Worden we hier volgens haar ook gegijzeld door radicale minderheden? Daar praten we zo over en natuurlijk ook nog over de Amerikaanse verkiezingen. Tot ziens.
BNR Nieuwsradio. The Big Five. Diana Matroos.
Welkom bij het tweede halfuur van BNR's Big Five van het Nieuwe Amerika. Deze week praat ik met 5 excellente Amerika-kenners over de toekomst van het land en onze verhouding met Amerika. Alle afleveringen van deze Big Five, bijvoorbeeld met Bernard Hammelburg, Casper Thomas en Nout Wellink, zijn te luisteren in de BNR-app. Vandaag is Ayaan Hirsi Ali mijn gast, mensenrechtenactiviste en onderzoeker aan de Hoover Instituut van Stanford University. En zoals eerder gezegd, op verzoek van Ayaan Hirsi Ali doen we dit gesprek in het Engels. En we hebben het vanwege het grote tijdsverschil met Californië gisteravond al opgenomen. Dus mochten er andere actualiteiten zijn, dan begrijpen jullie dat we die niet hebben kunnen meenemen. Ayaan, we were already talking about the American elections already. And I was wondering, what is your feeling about Biden winning these elections?
Well, my feeling is, of course, there's going to be a return to conventional. There'll be a conventional politician back in the White House. And I cheer that on. So that's point number one. Point number two, the election outcome that Biden and Harris wanted did not materialize. And so with this divided government where we call it a lame duck situation here. Yeah.
Sorry that I interrupt you because this I have a question from Nout Wellink, and it's referring to this topic. He's the oud-president van de Nederlandse Bank, of course, en niet-uitvoerend bestuurder bij ICBC, de grootste bank van China. And you already answered it a little bit, but he had the following question for you.
Hoe groot is nou het risico dat Biden uiteindelijk toch een lame duck president zal worden?
Yeah, you already referred to lame duck. Is he going to be a lame duck?
And the answer to that question depends on what happens in the state of Georgia. There are 2 Senate seats there that in January are going to have what they call runoffs here. That means the election outcome of November this year did not it didn't give us a clear winner. And so then they have to go and redo it. And historically, Republicans tend to do better with these types of runoffs, especially in Georgia. So I would say my expectation is that the Republicans will hold on to the Senate and Biden-Harris will have the White House. But again, I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. I think that is going to force both parties to learn to compromise. Because by when it, you know, 2022, 2024, both parties will need to have a record to run on. Republicans don't want to be seen as the party of no, and Biden-Harris will have to be very careful that they are not labeled and pigeonholed as hard left and socialist and giving in to... what that means for foreign policy... That's an interesting question.
It's an interesting question, but you don't know the answer to that question yet.
Well, we will see as the days come along. I think the first policy issue that we're going to focus on is going to be COVID and COVID relief and all things related to COVID. And then the next thing, there was some of these regulations that Trump removed that got the economy going and growing. What will Biden and Harris do about that? What will they do about the trade wars? Will they go back to the Paris Accord? Is it even possible to just go back? What about the Iran nuclear deal? These are issues that I think we are going to see. I always imagine a lunch between Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden saying, okay, what can we agree on and what should we just... postpone talking about. And I think some of these issues might be postponed.
The biggest problem for the U.S. Besides COVID is, of course, that the U.S. is divided. You also already talked about this earlier. What would your advice be to President Biden, or he's still president-elect, of course? What would your advice be?
My advice would be pick three things or four things that you can find common ground with the Republicans and get them done. Infrastructure, I think the COVID relief is one of them. The DACA, I don't know if my Dutch audience knows this, but these are immigrants who were born here. Mm-hmm. But they have no legal status. And giving them legal status, I know a lot of Republicans are open to that. So I would say pick those policy issues that you can find common ground on and implement them as fast as possible. And after the 100 days, which that's the end of the honeymoon, then I think the real infighting can begin on both sides. But get as much done as you possibly can.
Yeah, but when it comes to the American people, because we addressed already, they're so divided now at this moment, and Trumpism isn't going to disappear, and also Trump, he doesn't want to give up still. So this can also have a negative effect. How should Biden cope with this?
Well, he gave a press conference that I thought was excellent. I think his speech where he said, let's heal, let's come together, let's unite, that was also excellent. I mean, keep it going. If you ran a campaign saying, I'm going to be different, I'm going to bring decency, I'm going to, then show it, prove it.
Yeah. And do you think there are really new times that are coming into the United States, that it will be a new movement?
I think this is the times we're living in. What we call Trumpism, and people in the UK call it Brexit, and I don't know what we call it in the Netherlands, but there is a revolt against the pace of globalization. Open borders, open that whole. This is what really under. When you go past these personas, you have to look at what exactly is it that people are opposed to, and I think those issues are deep, and is manufacturing going to come back to America?
But besides that, because wars, sorry that I interrupt you, but you were also referring about the groupthink and the Black Lives Matter movement and the woke. So how is he going to fix that? Because this is a real problem in the United States right now, that you have different groups, the white people against the minorities. And how should he cope with that?
But when we started our conversation, I told you that the normal average person, black, Hispanic, white, Asian, that is not how people I see on the ground relate or communicate with one another. This whole woke business is an elite business. The woke issue, the woke philosophy, is a creed followed by, in my view, white, college-educated, spoiled brats of the millennial level. It's not the average man and the average woman. It doesn't affect anyone else. But when the policies that are informed by woke philosophy comes to, say, our schools or our playgrounds, or when it's foisted upon us, we all say no.
Yeah.
There are more people, more Hispanics, who voted for Donald Trump in 2020 than in 2016.
Yeah, so
regardless of his rhetoric. And there are more black people who voted for him in 2020 than voted for him in 2016. You have to look at the policies and go past and beyond the personas. And I think this woke philosophy, it's dangerous. But
why?
You can easily defeat it. It's dangerous because it closes the mind of the young and the leadership. It's dangerous because some.
But also, it's dangerous for the institutions you addressed earlier.
Yes.
What are your worries there?
It's gaining institutional ground. We're getting these dumb racial bias trainings in nuclear facilities all over the government. The military is getting it. We're getting it in the universities. And so I think, in a sense, that you then create an atmosphere where people are just not. They don't feel free to share what they really think.
Yeah.
And that's not a liberal society. That if you're afraid of saying what you think, then, you know, that's dangerous.
Yeah, I know you stated earlier that you chose to you went to America because you this is a land of ideas about liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Are you disappointed? What's going on now?
No, and I also have to say, I was perfectly happy in Holland, and I could say whatever I wanted to say. But when you are a member of parliament, you are a part of that caucus, and you are obviously not free to go around and say whatever you want to say because you speak for the whole party. I went to America because in 2006, my neighbors kicked me out of my house by going to court and at Hof, the appeals court, agreeing with my neighbors and saying, get out. And so a normal life for me was made impossible because of that situation. I didn't go to America because I thought my freedom of speech in Holland was threatened. I didn't feel that my freedom of speech in Holland was threatened. Mm-hmm.
But you like the idea of the United States because of its liberty and it's the land of that they have ideas. And now you stated it's completely different.
Yes, I love America. I love Holland. On a personal level, I went, of course, because I was seeking, as you remember, personal anonymity. And I have anonymity in the United States. No one knows who I am when I'm walking on the streets. It's perfectly fine. It suits me. But in both, as a citizen, both in the Netherlands and here in America, I feel engaged. And I think that in the Netherlands, I recognize the threat of the failure to integrate immigrants and the threat from radical Islam. In America, there's a similarity there, but there's also this extra, this new ideology that is raging. And so in my civic engagement, this is the kind of work I do. But I'm leading a perfectly happy life.
Okay, that's good to hear, that's good to hear. Zometeen praat ik verder met Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Maar natuurlijk eerst naar Jurgen Rijman. Want zometeen om 11 uur is er weer Ask Me Anything. Jurgen, waar ga je het over hebben?
Ja.
The Big Five. BNR Nieuwsradio. Diana Matroos.
Je luistert naar BNR's Big Five van het Nieuwe Amerika. Mijn gast is Ayaan Hirsi Ali, mensenrechtenactiviste en onderzoeker aan de Hoover Institute van Stanford University. We are already talking about the Netherlands already. And I was wondering, when you look back, how did Donald Trump influence Dutch politics in your eyes?
Well, I'm not sure he influenced Dutch politics at all.
No.
I really don't know. I mean, I think if you look at issues such as how much does a certain country contribute to NATO, from what I remember, the Netherlands paid its contributions anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's countries like Germany. Angela Merkel's relationship with Trump was, I would say, they weren't the best of friends.
Yeah. But of course, I was also referring to populism and Forum for Democracy and Geert Wilders have expressed their kinship with Trump. So what will this loss mean for them, that Trump is no longer the president from January?
But Geert Wilders was there before Donald Trump, and populism in Holland was there before Donald Trump. Don't you remember Pim Fortuyn?
Yeah. I remember him. I never forget him, of course. So I there know. Will be no effects.
I would say they might have tried to, copy some of the tactics and some of the campaign strategies. But knowing the Netherlands, I think the Dutch people, average person is a person of common sense, and they're not going to run after shiny objects. And the Dutch will always do exactly what is in their interest.
Yeah. And, but of course, of course, we also have the Black Lives Matter movement here in the Netherlands, and that was inspired also with the Black Lives Matter movement in the US. So, do you have the same criticism?
That was before that. We didn't have Black Lives Matter, but we had these, to me, remarkable conflicts about Sinterklaas and who's the little black guy who goes with Sinterklaas? What's his name? The Gollywog.
Is Zwarte Piet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zwarte Piet, yeah. We used to have the Zwarte Piet disputes, which were more entertaining than politically consequential.
Well, it's not that entertaining anymore. During the years, it is getting more aggressive from both sides. So how do you view on the discussion around Zwarte Piet at this moment?
My view is we should not give up. These traditions like Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet, these were there hundreds of years old. And so I would make a cultural argument to say, don't give in. Because today, here's what I'm seeing in America. Today they'll come for Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet. And tomorrow they will say, okay, we have to pull this statue because, the guy from 600 years ago, he had slaves, things like that. So my attitude, but I'm not a policymaker in the Netherlands and I'm not a policymaker in the United States of America, would be to take the position that Macron, the French president, took, which is we are not going to do away with any of the symbols of the Republic.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Okay, but on the other hand, there are a lot of children that have a colored skin and they're very depressed about Zwarte Piet. So this really affects those kinds of children. This is also.
I want to stop you right there.
Okay.
I want to stop you right there.
Yeah.
And tell you that is absolute nonsense. I have a black skin and I came to the Netherlands and I dressed up as a Zwarte Piet and I loved it and I enjoyed it. It's fun. And to be told, to tell the wider society that black children are getting depressed because of Zwarte Piet is pure rubbish, which you should never entertain.
But when
children,
we go
they
to
have
the
no idea they, yeah. they are not politicized. they love it's a lovely, it's the sweetest holiday. If you ask me what do I miss the most about Holland, I would say it's Sinterklaas, because it's so sweet and so innocent.
Yeah, but when you go to the United States and when people of the United States visit the Netherlands, they are shocked when they see Zwarte Piet here, because black facing is, as you know, it's no go in the United States. So you love the United States, and I'm really a bit
but
confused what you're saying now.
Love. I don't believe in blind life. And when they talk about Zwarte Piet, my job then is to explain to them what it is. It is like Halloween. It's like any of these children's holidays. My children love Halloween. And they want to dress up as whatever you tell them not to dress up as.
Yeah, but Zwarte Piet also, it's about a history. And this history is also about slavery, about racism. So that is also not only why children are affected by it, but also adults with colored skin.
Oh, come on. It's not a history of racism. Once upon a time, all humanity had slaves. There are people still in Africa and in the Middle East who still have slaves. It's not about condoning slavery. It's a children's holiday. It is fun. It's joyful. And here's where you are going to get into trouble with giving in to the woke. They want to abolish all things joyful, all things fun, everything. They found fault with Shakespeare. They think, reading Homer and Plato is racist. This is so incredibly maddening and dumb. And if you give in, so now you give in to Sinterklaas and say, okay, we can get rid of that. And they'll come for the next thing. They'll come for the next thing. Please, I hope that the Dutch, as a society, just say, we are going to have Sinterklaas whether you like it or not. The poetry, the Zwarte Piet, the letters, the chocolate letters, all of it.
Yeah, well.
And if they don't, if the Dutch don't, I will.
Okay, that is your opinion. Your former party is, of course, the VVD. In their last election program, they seem to leave neoliberalism behind when it comes to economic policies, but their stand on immigration politics is still strict. Are they still truly liberal in your eyes?
I've not been following what's going on in the VVD. To be quite frank with you, I don't think they should abandon economic liberalism. I think they should continue to stand for the economics of growth. Immigration is complicated and no one has got it right. No country that I know of has got immigration right.
Oh.
It's not
bless
COVID.
You, bless you, bless you.
Thank you. It's not COVID.
No.
So I really don't know. I don't know what to say about their policies. All I can say is when I left
bless
the
you
country,
again.
That
was three times. Eh? So it's going to be beautiful weather on your birthday, I hope.
Thank you. When I left the country, it was all unstable. Cabinets were falling. And now it seems as if, what's his name, Mark Rutte, is holding it together how long? 4 years at a time. And that's stability. That's good.
Okay.
You should compliment leaders when they do a good job. And I think the longer a cabinet lasts, you know, the more points you get.
Yeah. The last thing we have to do is to stel de kettingvraag again. Because mijn gasten stellen elkaar vragen. En maandag begint Art Rooijakkers aan een nieuwe week. BNR's Big Five van de ruimtevaart. Zijn gast is Jeroen Rotteveel van Easy Space in Delft. Ze zijn een wereldmarktleider op het gebied van satellieten ter grootte van een pak melk. En Ayaan, you may leave a question for him. What would you like to ask him?
So I would like to ask Jeroen, first of all, I would say I don't know if I can ask an intelligent question regarding this topic because I know absolutely nothing about it. But the one question I would like to ask him would be how in the 21st century a passenger airplane can disappear without any trace, and his line of work and all these satellites, is it something he can explain, and is it something in the future that can prevent such phenomena from happening?
Okay, thank you for that question, Ayaan, and thank you for joining us, Ayaan Hirsi Ali.
Thank you, Dan. Bye.
Bye. En zoals altijd zijn alle afleveringen van BNR's Big Five terug te luisteren. Je vindt de podcast in de BNR-app en op bnr.nl. Maar nu het programma Ask Me Anything. Dus blijf vooral live hier op BNR. Ik wens iedereen een hele mooie dag en een heel fijn weekend.